Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Off and rolling, Wednesday, September 3rd, 2025. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on @Kuhn71. I'm alongside executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on @CDunning929. Connor, what is the word, my brother? How you doing?
Man, I'm sad.
Oh, why? What are you sad about?
Roman Anthony.
Oh, God. The Roman Empire has fallen?
The Roman Empire has fallen. It's, We'll talk about it a little bit later in the Blitz, but yeah. Man, no, absolutely devastating news today.
What else we need to talk about is your guy last night.
Devers?
Yeah, Rafi Devers got into a beef with Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland really escalated it, and we had a benches clearing shoving match because it's never really actually a brawl. Unless it's like Red Sox, Yankees, Cardinals, Cubs, something like that.
Correct.
But it was a benches clearing shoving match between the Giants and the Rockies. And I want to talk about it in the Blitz. I think I have beef with Major League Baseball's pitchers, just like all of them, and how thin-skinned they are when it comes to somebody pimping a home run. It's just it bothers the hell out of me. Something occurred to me last night, and it's not strictly about that situation. It's about situations like that and how frequent they are and how much they've happened in the past and why they shouldn't happen. Why they shouldn't happen. And pitchers need to take it upon themselves to keep it from happening. But yeah, you know what? Let me not get on my soapbox yet. We will save that for the Blitz. We have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. Overreaction, not an overreaction. Off the top, the NFL Top 100 list is officially wrapped up. And I think for some, the final voting was surprising. This is obviously the players voting on this. This is not anything else. This is the players saying who they think the best players in the NFL are. I think some people were surprised by the final outcome. I'm not necessarily surprised, but we will discuss in a bit. Also want to get to Memphis football and their opener against Chattanooga. Brendan Lewis, do I feel some promise from him? Was I happy about how he played against Chattanooga or not? We will discuss that. We have a big NBA story. And Pablo Torre, I mean, he is on a run unlike anything I've ever seen when it comes to real sports journalism. He found a story about Kawhi Leonard making $28 million for a no-show brand deal, I guess is the way you would put it. But the brand that he was signed up with was started because Clippers owner and the governor that he works under gave a $50 million investment to said company. So there is this thought that Steve Ballmer, to get Kawhi Leonard to L.A., to the Clippers, circumvented the salary cap, added on top of his max extension, and here we are today, and we're going to have to discuss that story. As far as guests are concerned, David Cobble joined at 5 o'clock, Colton Denning to talk some college football at 6 o'clock, and then we have some programming notes to get to in small talk. You see the NFL Red Zone Scott Hansen story?
It's what we all feared but knew what was going to happen. We knew.
I was hoping that cooler heads would prevail. But we know that NFL Network and the NFL have a 10% ownership stake in ESPN now. And because of that, ESPN's taken over NFL Red Zone and putting their touch on it. Is it is it fair to say with the announcement today, which we'll get to a bit later, they've ruined NFL Red Zone? They've ruined it?
I don't think ruined it. It's going to be different. It'll be different. But
like the allure of the entire show and program,
commercial free,
to me is taken away.
I don't know if it's completely taken away because, listen, and we do need to discuss this for a moment before we get to overreaction. Not an overreaction. One of the main reasons we all watch Red Zone, and we can be honest about it, is for fantasy football.
Sure.
So as long as my fantasy football teams, if I can still keep up with all my guys in one place, well, I will be very annoyed by the commercials, no doubt about it. I don't think the entire allure of it is taken away. It's certainly decreased.
Yes.
But I still think that being able to watch all of that football in one place, it will still have my attention as long as they don't mess with the actual show. Now, if there's actual show being messed with in the rhythms of it outside of the commercial breaks, then I might have some issues. But I think that I'm going to give it a chance because of my history with it. I'm giving them a chance to fight through the commercial breaks. But it was a blow. Listen, we all knew it was going to happen. We all knew it was going to happen. We were just hoping against hope that it wasn't.
We were hoping that it wasn't.
Tonight's a big night for us.
Is it?
Big night. Fantasy football drafts tonight.
Yeah.
We have some Gabe Kuhn show.
I know they do the randomized draft, but I feel like a little collusion against me is happening here. I have the 9th overall pick.
I got
that's one of the worst picks in the draft.
You could argue that 9 could be valuable. I have always held the opinion that you either want the top one, two, or three.
But this is a snake draft we're talking about, where I get the worst of the first round picks.
But you'll get the turn.
The turn is still 6 picks away. You know what I mean? Like,
how many people are in the league?
We have a 12-team league.
Oh, no! I thought it was 10!
Like,
oh, okay,
my turn is different. And listen, I know I came into this league with my hair on fire. Win it first year, second year two. I'm the runner-up to Jessica Benson. I feel like, and I know they randomize it every year, and we have a good commish, I think there was some collusion behind the scenes to drop me down in the draft order. I'm just saying.
I'm not sure I'm going to agree with that. Because, listen, I got the 2nd pick.
You feel great about it, don't you?
I won the league a couple years ago. I won it the season before you did. So if there was collusion, it was going to be against our show completely because we're clearly the best fantasy football show on this station.
Yeah,
it's not even close.
We have two champions
on this show, 2 of the last 3 years.
Yes,
the belt has been held by this show.
In the last three years, we've been in the championship game.
That is true. We have shown out almost every single time. I did not realize it was this big of a league. I thought it was 10.
You know, this year,
I didn't realize being expanded to 12 with your second overall pick.
It's a strange year to be at the very top.
It's a very strange year.
Top 5 picks.
It's a very strange year to be at the top. Listen, I think that number one, there's no doubt about it. Who you take? You're taking Ja'Marr Chase.
Yes.
If you have 1.1
in a PPR league, of course,
you're taking Ja'Marr Chase. 2. Man, that's difficult. The list tell me to take Bijan.
You got Bijan, you got Saquon.
My brain tells me to take Saquon. Some people would even argue that maybe a CeeDee Lamb could be up there this season.
Yeah.
But then George Pickens taking away some targets from him. I'm in a tough spot this year. You know, I'm not gonna show my hand too much, but I have a decision to make, I think, between a couple running backs tonight. If there's any fantasy football experts out there.
I know the hand you have dealt to you. It's Bijan or Saquon. One of the two.
I think that is absolutely the decision that I'm going to have to come down to. And, I'm not sure which way to go. Because we do have to take into consideration how many touchdowns the tush push takes away from Saquon. But he still had one of the greatest all-time seasons we've ever seen last year.
And he was number one in the NFL Top 100. So there's that.
Man. If I have any fantasy football experts out there listening, they want to give me some advice. Let me know.
It's going to be all over the place. So. PPR league, though. That's worth
it. It is PPR. That
PPR
matters.
League. Yeah. But hopefully both of us, one of us, if not both of us, end up there in the playoffs.
I'm just happy that you're not the one spot in front of me this season like you were last year. Because that was brutal.
I took your entire team.
This is not an exaggeration. Every single pick last year. The player I was about to take, Gabe took them. You had my team last year.
Great minds, brother.
Great minds. So technically, I made it to the championship last year.
Yeah, but the 92-9 league is going to be underway. We have first NFL game coming up tomorrow with the Cowboys and Eagles. Great week. Great week. But let's go ahead and open as we normally do on a Wednesday with overreaction, not an overreaction. By the way, Connor, I know we already talked about Red Zone. We're going to talk about it a little bit later, elaborate on it. There was another programming note I saw today. Are you familiar with Stream East?
I am.
The illegal streaming app that runs the world?
Wait, never heard of it. Never heard of it.
So it is the biggest illegal streamer. Got shut down today. Got shut down today. Tough news for a lot of
Thank
people.
Thank you for your
service. Although I will say, I'm almost positive there is more than one illegal streaming platform that can be defaulted to.
I wouldn't know.
Sure. I'm glad.
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
All right. The NFL Top 100 posted their top 10 players as voted on by players. Your top five, Saquon, Lamar, Josh Allen, Ja'Marr Chase, and then Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes at number five. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Not an overreaction. He has not been as good as the two quarterbacks ahead of him for the better part of 2 years. I'm sorry. And we can talk about his supporting cast. That's fine. We can talk about how that team still wins. That's fine. I get it. But if you have a problem with Mahomes at five, there's one of two things that you're struggling with. You don't understand the meaning of this list, voted on by players, and this is for 2025 and projecting 2025 who are going to be the best players in the National Football League. Or two, you're in denial with what not just our eyes, but the numbers tell us. The numbers tell us in 2024, even though Joe Burrow didn't make the playoffs, he was a better quarterback. Josh Allen, even though he didn't make the title game, he didn't get into the Super Bowl, he was a better quarterback. He was the MVP. Lamar Jackson threw for more yards, threw for more touchdowns, ran. He was a better quarterback last year. Like, you're just denying what is very apparent in front of your face. If you say to me, though, you can never rank him anything other than number one because of all he's accomplished, I'd tell you that past success doesn't always equal future success. And something that has occurred to me in the Patrick Mahomes conversation that I think gets ignored a lot is if you pay attention to how this usually goes with quarterbacks outside of Tom Brady in the modern era, you usually, again, in the modern era, get your championships in about a 4 to 8 year span. Then the main pieces that you've done it with, the mainstays either leave or age out. And I want to point out a couple of quarterbacks in the modern era that have close to the same amount, if not the same amount, or maybe a little bit more championships than Patrick Mahomes right now. Joe Montana is a good example of this. 4 championships in 8 years. He hurts his elbow at age 35, gets aged out by Steve Young, who was a better quarterback at that time. Steve Young, 3 and 6 years. Still very, very good, but George Seifert, who built that 49ers franchise into what it was there in the late 80s into the 90s, he retires a year after the final Super Bowl. Again, that's the guy who built it all. It's hard to maintain Super Bowl success without the guy that got you there year over year over year. Troy Aikman won 3 and 4 years. Aikman loses Jimmy Johnson, Barry Switzer, Michael Irvin in 99, Emmitt Smith. He loses all those guys in 5 years following his final Super Bowl. And then another example, Big Ben. He won 2 and 4 years early in his career. Then he slowly but surely has a changing of the guard. Here's Willie Parker, the bus, Hines Ward turning into Rashard Mendenhall, A.B., and Mike Wallace. They were still solid, still a good team, still very competitive. Just never quite got to where they were with those previous pieces. The only exception, of course, here is Tom Brady, right? Tom Brady won 7 championships in 19 seasons with 2 different teams, never had constant weapons, didn't really matter who the coach was, even though he won 6 with the same coach. He's an enigma. He's like, you almost leave him out of these conversations because it's unbelievable to think about what he accomplished. Now, getting to Mahomes, he has 3 Super Bowls in 5 seasons. from the date he won his first one to now. Three Super Bowls in five seasons. It's going on his sixth season in that run. And here's what I think the question is. And I know some people are going to look at this and say, Gabe, you're doing the same thing that we did with Tom Brady when he had that 10-year drought. But is it possible that Patrick Mahomes' championships and best ball are behind him? Is it possible? The fundamental question at this point in the modern era is he going to be more like Joe Montana, or is he going to be able to break that trend and be Tom Brady? Because that's air that I'm not sure he'll be in by the end of his career. And here's what I also see with that Chiefs franchise, and my antennas are up, and really the AFC in general, I'll cover all of it. Travis Kelce likely having a swan song year this season before starting his second act as an actor or whatever, his podcast, doing all that. There's been a lot of rumors about this being his final season before retirement, and we've seen him take a dip in production. Andy Reid, the coach that has been there by Patrick Mahomes' side this entire time, is approaching 70, and he's had some health scares in the past 5 years. How much longer is he going to be around and doing these things for Patrick Mahomes being his right-hand man? And Chris Jones. Chris Jones is 31 years of age. I haven't seen some massive dip in production. I still think he's a great player. But how much longer can he keep up that pace playing an interior defensive line position that's going to be rugged, that's going to put hits on your body, that just makes you uncomfortable as you age, as we have seen naturally throughout football history? And then I look around the AFC. A lot of good quarterbacking going on in the AFC. A lot of good teams in the AFC. We've watched Bo Nix come along with the Broncos. Josh Allen's still doing his thing with the Bills, and it feels like he's not regressing at all. He's getting better and better and better. And what's interesting about him is he has less and less and less around him on the offensive side of the ball, and he keeps continually getting better, winning MVPs that way. Lamar Jackson, I don't see him slowing down. Do you? Look at that offense right now. I know Derrick Henry may be gone here relatively soon, but you have Derrick Henry. You have a good offensive line. The defense should be improved. The secondary looks pretty solid. So I just think we're at this point with Patrick Mahomes where this goes one of two ways. The more obvious and likely scenario is that he loses the guys that he's done this with and won championships with all these years. And they're still going to be good, but they're not going to get over the hump. That's what history tells us. Or the other way is he puts himself into Tom Brady's rarefied air, which is hard for me to project for any quarterback, even if your name is Patrick Mahomes. And again, like the natural thing here to point out is Patrick's numbers have dropped. I think his effectiveness as a quarterback week to week in the NFL season have dropped. So I looking at him at number five, I think it's fair. I think the two quarterbacks ahead of him, without question, deserve to be ahead of him in the NFL top 100. But I also think just sort of looking at Patrick Mahomes from that 35,000-foot view, I think we need to ask ourselves some pretty interesting questions for where his career goes from here.
Well, it feels like that moment, you know, because he's been in the conversation with Tom Brady for the last few seasons, and understandably so. When you look at the numbers, when you look at the Super Bowls, when you look at the playoff success, it makes a ton of sense why Patrick Mahomes has been in the same sentence as Tom Brady. I think that you and I have still held, there's still a relatively large gap between the two of them, but he deserves to at least be in that conversation. This feels like that moment of, all right, if you want to be in that conversation, you've got to do a lot with not as much now. Your team is aging. It's moving into a new era of Kansas City Chiefs. Can you continue it by just being you? Can you continue it by being Patrick Mahomes? Can you turn losses into wins like you did a lot of times last season? He was amazing last year in late game situations.
In the clutch, for sure.
Yeah, and that's why.
Throughout the entirety of a game, there's inconsistencies,
but though. It's that final 5 minutes of a game. Is there anyone else in the league you want as a quarterback other than Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah.
And I still think that right now, I'm still taking Pat.
And I think I'm with you. I think I'm with you. But, like, here's my thing. I can foresee that changing. I think other teams in the AFC are catching up, little by little by little. Lamar Jackson, who was known as this playoff, you know, disappointment pretty consistently. Yeah, you can make that argument he was last year, but I saw a better version of Lamar Jackson in the playoffs last year than I had seen previously. Josh Allen, how many times has he been right on the precipice of beating this guy? It just feels like potentially he may be able to do that in the coming years, especially if Chris Jones is out the door, Travis Kelce's out the door. We'll see what happens with Andy Reid. It just feels like an inflection point in the career of Patrick Mahomes that not a lot of people are really highlighting at this moment.
It just feels like the Chiefs may be a little bit more vulnerable than they have been the last few seasons. And now this also might be coming off of a Super Bowl loss. We have, you know, a bad taste in our mouth because of it.
Sure.
They might end up having the same season they did last year in the regular season and making it back to the Super Bowl. I don't think any of us would be shocked if that happened. It just feels like...
But the margin... Here's the other thing. The margin for error has just shrunken for them. Now, here's the funny thing about that margin for error. They usually come out on top anyway.
Right.
They won 11 one-score games last year. They were 11-0 in one-score games. I don't think that's been done in NFL history. So, like, they're still finding ways with their experience to break through that margin of error. But when it shrinks like that, it's hard for me to imagine they're just continually going to go undefeated and win every single one-score game that's on their schedule for the rest of eternity. Like, that's just not how any of this works.
The reason, though, we all have a ton of hesitation to say that they might be worse this year, though, is like because they have Patrick Mahomes. And that's why he's number five. And I think that's why it makes sense that he's number five. We'll just have to see, is this the last season he'll be top five guy? Or can he continue that run like a Tom Brady did? All right, moving on. Alabama head coach Kalen DeBoer on the heels of his team's loss to Florida State. He told the media today that he still thinks his team can accomplish big things. My message is that our team is, I think, we have a good football team that can do some big things still this year. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
I think that's an overreaction. And listen, I know that we can only operate on the facts that we have, and the facts that we have are one game against Florida State, and that does not, you know, constitute a full generalization about a season. But they lost 31-17. It was dominating fashion that Florida State won that game in. And going into the year, what did we say about Alabama? What did we say has to be their identity? We said they're going to have to be good on both lines of scrimmage, and they're going to have to own people up front. And they couldn't do that against a sort of fully transfer portaled both sides of the ball against Florida State. And here's the thing that really, you know, puts me out of the college football playoff, Alabama making a run at a national title conversation. You've seen their schedule from this point forward with one loss already on their resume. Their opening game in the SEC, and you could say Alabama always finds a way to beat Georgia, but it's not Nick Saban anymore, it's Kalen DeBoer. They open their SEC slate on the road against Georgia. Then they're going to have number 22 Tennessee, third Saturday in October, as they normally do. And Tennessee has done pretty well against them in the past few years, and Tennessee is not near as bad or inept offensively at the quarterback position than we thought they were going to be. Joey Aguilar looked very solid against Syracuse. That LSU team on November 8th, like, I'm sorry, I watched them against Clemson, and if I compare their lines of scrimmage versus Alabama's lines of scrimmage against Florida State, I don't even think there's a comparison there. I don't think it's close. LSU is lapping the field based on that 1 week of performance that we have put out there, that one data point that we have. And then they already lost to Oklahoma last year, and I thought Oklahoma improved pretty drastically from a year ago. And that'll be on November 15th. That's their third to last game of the year. Who knows what happens in the Iron Bowl? It's at Auburn this year, and we know how strange things can get there at Jordan-Hare. So, like, I guess the point I'm trying to make is, like, when we talk about accomplishing big things, as Kalen DeBoer said, what does that mean? That means college football playoff, making a run at a national title. I can't see them going relatively unscathed through the rest of this schedule based on what I've seen already. And if big things at Alabama are constituted by college football playoff appearance, making a run at a national title, I don't see that happening this year. So I think this is just a drastic overreaction. I don't buy into Alabama. I saw way too much in the way of flaws in week one, and their schedule only gets harder from here, especially once they get into SEC play. So I'm not buying what Kalen DeBoer's selling.
I thought it was – Jeff made a great point yesterday when you were talking to him at 5 about how last year the entire conversation around the college football playoff was because this Alabama team got left out. Yep. Kalen DeBoer's Alabama team, they should have been in there, should have been in there. And then first game of the season, they come out, lay an absolute egg, and probably showed that last year's conversation around them
was stupid.
Was stupid.
And always was.
I mean, to be honest, I think that on this show we maintained, don't lose to Vanderbilt.
And Oklahoma, and a very average, if not mediocre, if not bad Oklahoma team.
Right. So it has been a rough, rough last four games for Alabama. Final one. We got our first look at Memphis quarterback Brendan Lewis this past Saturday against Chattanooga. His final stats, 22 of 28. 199 yards, a touchdown, an interception, and 81 rushing yards, and a TD. Lewis's first look in a Tiger uniform was promising. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Not an overreaction. I think the one stat that really brings it back to me and makes me feel, you know, so promising about what Brendan Lewis can do this year for this team. 81 yards, 10 rushes for 81 yards. It's the most by a quarterback in a Memphis uniform since 2011. And he's still threw the ball to me with some gumption. Now, he had that one disgusting play where he faced a little bit of pressure, threw it right to a Chattanooga defender. Like, I understand that was there. That's apparent. That's a mistake he's going to have to learn from. But other than that, throwing the football, I thought he was relatively impressive. He got the ball out on time, on target, took the easy plays, seemed to get through his progressions relatively well on top of running the football at a high level. And when you go back and you look at the 233 yards rushing, four different guys scored a rushing touchdown, 7.3 yards per carry on those rushes. I understand they're not going to be able to run the ball like that on everybody, right? It was Chattanooga this weekend. You have Georgia State. That's going to be a more of a challenge than what you saw this past weekend against Chattanooga. But I thought the offense operated very, very consistently. They looked comfortable, even though it's a lot of new faces. I was impressed with Brendan Lewis, his command, his understanding of the offense in such a short period of time.
I thought he looked great, and it was an exciting day for the Memphis Tigers. Listen, I understand that it was Chattanooga, and it's not something to throw a parade over, but he looked promising, and it was a different look from a Memphis quarterback than we've seen in a very long time. Like, who would you say is the best mobile quarterback before him? Like,
oh, God.
Paxton?
You're dating it back quite a while.
Was it Paxton by default?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jacob Karam ran the ball a little bit before Paxton took over. But, that's it. That's the last I'd look at it. I just felt good about it.
Like, I felt good about it, yes.
And I think what was nice about it is my expectations for how the offense was going to look with more RPO, read option, let Brendan Lewis use his skill of his legs, see what these other running backs can do. You have a stable full of running backs. I think all of the expectations I had for how it was going to look met reality in a big way, right? Because if it was – you know, completely off the cuff, they're throwing the ball, airing it out like they did under Seth Hennigan, I'd be like, I don't know if this is the plan for anybody not named Chattanooga, and I'd feel uncomfortable about it. But what I thought the offense was going to look like, sort of at their peak, I thought my expectations were met in that realm. They seem to have a feel for what Brendan's comfortable with, what this offense is comfortable with, and that's a good sign in week one.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good showing by him. And it's one of those deals where I understand it's Chat, and I can already hear people be like, well, it was Chattanooga. What'd you expect? Well, he didn't suck. You know,
did you
want him to be that? No.
Besides the pick, that's mostly right. What I expected.
They had high success against Chat. They took care of business. The game was over in like the first 10 minutes of the game. Yeah. You're like, okay, they're going to be able to take care of business. It's what you wanted from an opening game from the Memphis Tigers. I do want to ask you, you were there. What did you feel about the passing game from game one? Is there anything you can really take away from it? Did you feel better about the wide receivers, worse about the wide receivers?
I don't feel about the wide receivers yet. I think that this is, you know, Ryan said leading into the game, it's going to be wide receiver by committee, and that's what it kind of looked like. You had Cortez Brom, who came over from Nevada with the lone touchdown through the air. He had three targets. Jamari Hawkins had three targets. Marcelo Bussey had three targets. Christian Ross had three targets. Dorsey had six. Like, they spread the ball around, which is sort of what I expect from that wide receiver room, right? I don't know if you'll have that 1,000-yard Rock Taylor, Calvin Austin III, DeMonte Coxey wide receiver, but I think you'll have a lot of guys hanging around that, you know, 400 to 600 to 700 mark throughout that wide receiver room, depending on how much they air it out on any given game. But I think what was nice for me to see is the comfortability that Brendan Lewis has taking those 3 to 5 step drops and unloading the football on time, on target, right? He took some stick routes. He threw it over the middle. He had a couple of deep shots. They missed one that would have been massive early in the game. It was a skinny post, and it was just dropped. But I think the thing we need to focus on when it comes to the passing game is the comfortability of the quarterback more than the wide receivers at this moment. I think that they have enough in the wide receiver room to be successful in throwing the ball. It's about, my questions were mostly about that quarterback. How comfortable is he in this type of offense with these expectations? And what does he look like when he takes that 5-step drop? How is he getting through his progressions? I think he passed the test, even though it was against Chattanooga.
Is there anything that you want to see improvement on in the next game?
Under pressure. Don't just throw it up to a Chattanooga defender. You know, like that's really my only gripe. Only gripe when it came to Brendan Lewis in this game. He finally got some pressure in his face for the first time, because his offensive line looked good, paved the way for all those rushing yards, and they kept him clean for the most part. As soon as he saw a little bit of pressure, he freaked out, threw off his back foot directly to a Chattanooga defender. So when you get that pressure in your face, which you're going to see a lot more outside of this Chattanooga game, make sure that you have your wits about you and you don't get sped up too much.
It's just tough because it feels like that we're not going to truly know what this Memphis team is made out of until September 20th.
Until week four at home against Arkansas.
But hey, I'll take positivity.
I think we'll see a little bit more these next 2 weeks, right, against Georgia State and Troy, but I don't think we get the full picture, to your point, until we see them at home against Arkansas. What do they look like then? Against a better all-around talent.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see. All right, now Pablo Torre, he has exposed a lot. He has exposed a lot in the past, 4 to 5 months, Connor? Is that fair to say? He exposed the NFL owners colluding to bring down guaranteed money. He's exposed plenty of things in that realm of the NFL ownership and contracts. But today, he exposed a very, very interesting story about Steve Ballmer, the owner of the Clippers, and Kawhi Leonard. We'll tell you the details of that next and discuss when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Really interesting development out of the NBA that was exposed by Pablo Torre on Pablo Torre Finds Out podcast. Torre cited a trove of internal documents from the tree planting company Aspiration, which Steve Ballmer, the governor of the Los Angeles Clippers, partially funded with a $50 million investment through his personal LLC on September 14, 2021. Later that month, on September 27, 2021, the Clippers announced a $300 million partnership with the now bankrupt Aspiration, including sponsorship in the team's new arena and on the team's jersey patch. According to Torre, Kawhi Leonard, a player for the Clippers, of course, agreed to a four-year, $28 million endorsement deal in April 2022 through his LLC KL2 Aspire. Now, is this a big deal? Potentially, yeah, because the idea here would be that they circumvented the salary cap rules to pay Leonard more money on top of the already max extension he signed with the Clippers around 2021. Under the circumvention rules of the NBA's 2023 collective bargaining agreement, teams can be punished for circumventing the league's salary cap. Penalties can include fines up to $7.5 million, direct forfeiture of draft picks, voiding any player contract, and a suspension up to a year for any team personnel found to have engaged in such a violation. The best example to draw upon, and this was previous to the Adam Silver administration, this was David Stern, and we know David Stern was stern, no pun intended, about what he was going to do in enforcing the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement. In 2000, it was discovered that the Minnesota Timberwolves engaged in an illegal secret agreement with Joe Smith by allegedly promising to pay him a future multi-million dollar deal if he signed with the team on a shorter contract for less money. What did David Stern do to the Timberwolves in 2000? He removed five first-round draft picks, fined the team $3.5 million, and he banned Kevin McHale, who was the head coach, and the governor or owner at that time, Glenn Taylor, for a season, along with voiding the contracts for Joe Smith, who they made the deal with. So this could potentially be a massive deal. Now, I want to go to a guy who is a previous governor, just sold his team in the Dallas Mavericks. He had something to say about it, Mark Cuban, on Twitter today. He said, "I'm on Team Ballmer. As much as I wish they circumvented the salary cap, first, Steve isn't that dumb. If he did try to feed Kawhi Leonard money, knowing that what was at stake for him personally and his team, do you think he would let the company go bankrupt, knowing all the creditors would be visible to the world? They got scammed by Aspiration, along with many others, crimes for which Aspiration pleaded guilty last week. Scammers do scammy things. They did a $300 million sponsorship deal with the Clippers in 2021. That's a huge deal. The better the team does, the more value the sponsorship has. It actually makes perfect sense that if they stole money from investors and want the Clippers to succeed, why not give stolen money to help keep their best player?" He said it's sad that Pablo Torre didn't take the time to find out how these scammers pulled off their scam. The idea that the default is Ballmer is the bad guy is going to backfire on him. And I believe Mark Cuban has sent some DMs to Pablo Torre, and he may be doing a visit with Pablo Torre on the Pablo Torre Finds Out podcast. But this could potentially be a massive deal, because if the NBA, which did launch an investigation into the Clippers and Steve Ballmer today, if they find out that this was done to circumvent the salary cap and to pay Kawhi Leonard more money on top of his max extension, they could potentially be handed down hefty penalties. Now, do I think that ultimately happens? That's the question that gets begged when I bring all this up. No, I don't. Because one, Adam Silver is very, very soft-handed when it comes to the owners in his league. He does not usually try to burden them with a bunch of fines, doesn't try to make them forfeit draft picks if he doesn't have to. I guess if he's forced to in this situation, he may go down that road. But also, adding a little bit more context, when Adam Silver was handed the league and was the new commissioner of the NBA, what happened almost immediately? The Donald Sterling situation with the Los Angeles Clippers. He forced Donald Sterling to sell the team because of everything that was going on. And who was his handpicked guy to buy the team and take over the Los Angeles Clippers? None other than the guy that's caught up in this, Steve Ballmer. They're buddy-buddy. They like each other. Adam Silver handpicked him to take over the team. I just have a lot of hesitancy to think that the NBA and Adam Silver is going to, even if they find a bunch of guilt behind all of these accusations, I just have a hard time believing Adam Silver is going to hand down an inordinate amount of punishment to Steve Ballmer, who he's clearly very buddy-buddy with.
Yeah, you know, if Ballmer was had a firearm on Instagram, he'd bring the absolute hammer down on him.
Absolutely.
But, you know, circumventing the salary cap and paying a guy $28 million, allegedly, under the table, like you're in an episode of The Sopranos, that's above board. That's with Adam Silver. So, I mean, to your point, if this was David Stern, they'd be getting an example made out of him. No doubt about it. It's just, it does feel like there's a few smoking gun things here. It's just, I'm curious what the NBA is going to be able to prove. I wonder what the NBA is going to want to prove with this.
Yes.
I'm curious because if the rest of the owners in the league are saying, hey, maybe we don't investigate this too much.
Yes, let's relax. Because
there might be a couple other deals.
Pablo Torre suggested that he's going to look into the New York Knicks. If you'll remember, when Jalen Brunson re-upped with the Knicks, he declined to take a max because he said he wanted more people around him. Now, is there something going on where they said, if you don't take the max, we can surround you with better players and we'll make up that the rest of that max money elsewhere? That's what Pablo Torre says he's going to look into next. And I think that there is something to that, because when you look at these big markets, yes, they're attractive. Yes, they're in destination cities, but also there's more dollars to be made off the floor in those places. There's usually richer owners with more bankroll and more connections. Is that part of this conversation? Do we look at the Knicks and the Lakers as examples for that as well? The Celtics. Who else is doing something similar? What else can you find out in this realm when you look into other franchises? I'm very curious to see.
And it's just, when you look at the actual report, the thing that really stands out to you is this endorsement is void if you are not a Los Angeles Clipper.
Yes.
That really stands out to you. And then Pablo Torre today, he was on the Dan Patrick Show, and this is a really interesting quote, I thought. Steve Ballmer and the Clippers, when asked them for comment, they said that it was provably false. At the time, they did not know that we had over 3,000 pages of documents and 7 sources. Not one source, 7. 3,000 pages. It seems like Pablo Torre did his due diligence.
Well, yes, absolutely.
So I know that this is alleged, but man, it would make sense. It would make a lot of sense.
All of the details do tend to point that this was an effort to circumvent the salary cap. All of the what Pablo Torre put out, all of it seems to point in that direction. But I am very curious how hard the NBA goes after Steve Ballmer and the Clippers, and two, how much of this can you tie back to they were truthfully, without question, trying to pay Kawhi Leonard more money on top of a max extension and truly circumventing the salary cap. I wonder how much you can prove
about
lawyers and in court.
If you can prove it. Right. It's all about if you can prove it. And what's interesting is you brought up, you know, when the Timberwolves tried to do something like this and they got caught, they were penalized 5 first-round picks. Do you know how many first-round picks the Clippers own until 2030?
Not many, I can't imagine.
4.
4, okay.
So they would have to find a first-round pick somewhere. If you go to 2032, you can find 5 first-round picks. But
do you agree with me? It just seems it seems to me,
I would be shocked if he brought the
hammer. Even though Pablo Torre found a lot out, it seems like even if they prove this, Adam Silver will be pretty soft-handed and slap on the wrist.
Well,
slap on the wrist, like when it comes to Steve Ballmer and the Clippers.
I feel like I honestly feel like, based on the punishment, we're going to know if other teams in the league are doing this. If it's a heavy punishment, if they can prove something and it's a heavy punishment, then it's probably just the Clippers. If it's a light punishment, slap on the wrist, and there were things that you could prove, it means that other teams are doing it too.
I will say this is not that surprising.
No,
in the slightest.
It's not surprising.
These are things that used to happen under the table in a lot of ways, whether it be college football or professional sports.
I don't know. Maybe a Patriots dynasty may have done something like this. Who knows?
Right, like with Tom Brady in particular, when he was taking all those quote unquote pay cuts that we always heard about.
Mm-hmm. The TB12 Foundation or whatever it was, huh?
So, like, this has happened. It's just this one, there was some serious digging by Pablo Torre to expose a whole lot about what is going on behind the scenes, finding documents, finding the dollar amounts, and realizing it's part of a company that had to deal with a court case not too long ago and is fully bankrupt. It's no longer around. So I want to see where this ends up, but ultimately I would not hold my breath when it comes to Adam Silver punishing Steve Ballmer and the Clippers really heavy-handed.
I mean, I got to say, a contract that says Kawhi Leonard's going to get paid $28 million to do nothing except play for the Clippers.
It was a no-show.
I mean, that's...
It seems like a smoking gun. It seems like a smoking gun. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
So we'll see.
We'll see.
But
now,
again, do not hold your breath on Adam Silver being mean or heavy-handed with a punishment to his guy, Steve Ballmer. It just doesn't seem like a realistic thing.
Stay with me here. In the same breath as us saying the NBA and other owners may not want too much of an investigation because they may be doing something similar, you could also say the rest of their owners might get together and say, sacrifice them. If you go hard at them, if you punish them, it makes it look like the rest of us are clean. Hey, we're not doing nothing. Make an example out of them, because we're definitely not doing that. There's no way we would do that. They cheated. Hammer them.
Yeah, no, I don't. If they have some type of guilty conscience, I cannot see that, because then there will be digging into them, and they don't want that. So we'll see. I think the reaction is going to tell the story for us.
I don't know. Sacrifice one so the many can live.
We'll see. We shall see. Now, I also saw this, and it was Bill Simmons' podcast. He was talking with Charles Barkley, having a conversation with Charles Barkley. And we have talked about the second apron and the new CBA pretty heavily, Connor, on this show. And I think nationally it's talked about a lot. It's hard to keep together good teams. It's hard to bring in the best talent. You can't make super teams anymore. And if you do try to make a super team, you have to surround it with a bunch of vet minimum guys. You don't see a lot of success. Look at the Phoenix Suns for an example of that. But Charles Barkley sort of took the other side of this conversation. I want you to listen to this conversation. We'll react afterwards. Leaning, for me, I lean more to Bill Simmons' side.
I do too.
As I've said on multiple occasions on this show. But Charles Barkley having that take does surprise me to a certain extent. Like, I find it a little bit bizarre that he would be as he is. Because Charles Barkley, correct me if I'm wrong, Connor, there's a point in his career where he wasn't winning championships and he teamed up with Clyde Drexler and Hakeem Olajuwon and then Scottie Pippen. Like, he did this himself, right? When it comes to, like, the competition back and forth, you tried to go join other superstars to win the championship that always evaded you. So for him to have that take, I think it's the messenger conversation that we consistently have. I really don't like his message as opposed to some of these other examples. But the messenger here, it just does not hit home. Brother, you tried to do the same thing that you're accusing these guys of doing. Now, I will say, when it comes to second apron, it has caused a whole lot of ruckus. I think it has successfully done something that I wanted it to do, in the fact that you can't just put together a super team like the Miami Heat or the Celtics and expect to have long-term success. Right, like, you can't just go buy the best players on the market and expect to have long-term success. That's nice. That's something that it's accomplished. But I think the flip side of that is what Bill Simmons said on the way out there. You have some very successfully run organizations like the Oklahoma City Thunder that traded for a not-so-valuable SGA that turned into an MVP, that have drafted using multiple draft picks that they acquired through trade to get Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams and the other Jalen Williams and, you know, Isaiah, like all these different guys, not Isaiah Cho, but to all these other guys, they made a really good trade to go get a very solid contract in Alex Caruso. But by the time that you have to pay all of those rookies that you drafted and developed, you're paying them a whole lot of money, and eventually you have to break it up because it's too much to handle financially. You just can't get there. You have the repeater tax rules with the second apron. You're going to have to pay a huge tax bill every year. So that's where it's become a problem. I think it has accomplished what we wanted. You're not just getting all these superstars into massive markets, but on the back end, there was an unintended consequence where you have a lot of front offices putting together good rosters by internal development, and that's not being rewarded. That's being punished. That's the problem that I think everybody has, and I don't know if Charles Barkley sees that.
I'm in total agreement. It felt like a anti-super team, big three.
And I'm with him on that.
Which I understand, but trying to connect the second apron to LeBron and the Miami.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Miami Heat, I'm just not sure if there's a through line there. It's, and again, the Boston Celtics did it before LeBron and Miami did it. It was,
yeah.
Which I, people, and like Kobe
and
was
then
doing
we
it
had
those
Kevin Durant
days.
To the Warriors before right. The new CB. Like,
and I mean, that happened simply because Steph Curry's ankles weren't durable in his first few seasons. So he never got the max. So they had money to sign a guy like Kevin Durant. That had nothing to do. It's a misunderstanding of, I think, what actually happened with the second inning. I'm in full agreement with Bill. I think that the Players Association didn't fully understand what the penalties were going to be and what the consequences were going to be with the second apron in that new CBA. It's as simple as that to me. It's not and I'm not sure how.
Can you even just say it's the Players Association?
No.
Because I'd imagine the governors of these teams, the guys putting up the money, would want to bring in as much talent as humanly possible.
Some of
and
them.
They're not necessarily able to do that. Obviously, the right. Lower level teams in the NBA, they want.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.